The newly rented safe house, now housing their operation, was messily strewn with loose papers, empty candy wrappers, and various bits of equipment, as was so often the case on counter-espionage operations. The long hours and intense focus needed to hunt a mole or identify their handler rarely allowed much time for cleaning or left anyone with either the desire or energy to do so. All four members of Pope's ad hoc team were present. Trap was half asleep, lying on the couch that had come with the place. It smelled of stale cigarette smoke, but he'd slept on worse. The aroma of coffee brewing in the kitchen battled with the more deeply ingrained scent and began to tug him toward wakefulness. Eliza was leaning against him. The television in the living room was large, and the box it had arrived in was still leaning against a nearby wall. No one had thought to purchase either a stand or a wall mount, so it now sat on top of a dented coffee table, perilously balanced in such a way that it threatened to topple over at any moment. It was muted, though the kaleidoscopic image of ATN News' intro graphic was flashing in the dimly lit room. Ikeda reached for the remote.
Guys, I'm guessing we want to watch this.
Behind Trap, Pope dropped a stack of paper onto the dining table.
What?
Ikeda keyed the volume button on the remote, catching the ATN anchor halfway through her spiel.
Ciara?
Trap levered himself into a vertical position on the sofa as the news report switched to the remote feed. He faintly recognized the reporter, a redhead with deeply freckled cheeks that almost looked like a tan until the camera zoomed in.
Thank you, Amanda. A brutal but until now limited war between Mexico's two largest drug cartels, the Crusaders and the Federación, last night spilled onto America's streets for a second time.
The image on the screen cut to a scene from a highway in Texas, California, or somewhere equally hot, dry, and dusty. A location flashed up a second later, confirming his suspicions. The feed showed a smashed-up Honda SUV, windshield riddled with bullets, and a spattering of what was unmistakably blood on the driver's cracked window.
National security sources here in Washington say that a large shipment of drugs that came through the southern border was last night hijacked by a rival narcotics gang, resulting in at least six homicides that we are so far aware of, and perhaps several more. It is not yet known which of the rival factions the drugs initially belonged to, but as you can see, Amanda, this is a dramatic escalation in cartel behavior. And following the murder of DEA Administrator Mark Engel, along with several U.S. attorneys last week, a dark sign indeed.
Thank you, Ciara. Is there any indication as to why this attack took place?
That's where it gets interesting, Amanda. Until last night, this was primarily a Mexican affair. Squabbles between the cartels are not uncommon, though the early indications are that this one is becoming extremely serious. We know that over the past week, several key figures in the Crusaders have been assassinated or gone missing. It's understood that last night, there was also an attempt on the life of Ramon Reyes, the leader of this particular organization. The fight appears to be over territory within Mexico. The violence in the United States is an unfortunate side effect.
How so?
It seems that a network of Crusaders-operated safe houses and drug runners inside Mexico has been targeted by the Federación. Drug gangs affiliated with the Crusaders inside the United States have started running out of product, and it seems that they have begun resorting to extreme measures to acquire it. We don't yet know whether last night's violence was a result of Crusaders gangsters targeting a Federación shipment or the other way around, but the results are the same. Violence on American streets.
Thank you, Ciara.
The newsreader shifted her gaze to a different camera angle.
ATN is also able to reveal an exclusive recording from Crusaders cartel leader Ramon Reyes that we believe was sent to his supporters last night. Please note, if you have minors in the room, this may not be suitable.
An image of a squat yet obviously muscular man appeared on the television screen. He had dark hair, and that was about all that could be made out from the grainy long-distance photograph. A name appeared on screen to help those who hadn't been paying attention.
Guys, it's time to fight. They came after me, they came after our people, and we killed them, okay? You know who I'm talking about. It's time to go to war. We never wanted this fight, but now we're in it. We will win it. You know that, okay? You are killers. So go kill. If you see a Federation cockroach, kill him. I will give $1,000 for every Sicario, $10,000 for any capo, $10 million for the man who brings me Carrion's skull.
The anchor returns to the screen.
And in a disturbing development only just breaking, in the state of Michoacan, deep in Federacion territory, more than 50 bodies were dumped in the middle of the highway. ATN has also received unconfirmed reports of several similar atrocities. The question now is whether the Mexican authorities will be able to get a handle on this horrific wave of violence, and whether they will do so before we see more death and destruction on American streets.
Trapp turned down the volume as the broadcast moved on to other topics.
Okay, you guys are thinking what I'm thinking, right? This is all just one big coincidence, right?
Right.
Director Rutger's gonna want results. Now that this thing has spilled over on home soil, the press is gonna be on this like a bitch in heat. The president's gonna need to give them something.
You can't tell him not to?
A smile danced on Ikeda's lips.
I thought that's all you Counter and Del Bugues did. Just hide in a corner somewhere and tell everyone how hard you're working.
We are. We just can't tell anyone about it. Problem is, it's not...
It's not the Russians or the Chinese we're up against. At least I doubt it. I'm guessing the cartels finally figured they'd get further in life by hiring experts. Whoever Conway's handler is, we know he's good. He's probably former intelligence. Whether ours, the Brits, someone else, who knows? Doesn't really matter. We won't get away with pulling the national security card on this one.
Then what?
We need to accelerate the sting. Find out who the handler is and who he works for.
Do we?
Do we what?
Need to find out who he's working for. Seems to me like the cartels are starting to tear themselves apart. Is that such a bad thing? Why don't we just let them do the hard work for us?
You really are CIA, aren't you? That sounds like something you guys would have pulled back in the 80s. Real Machiavellian shit. And you look so innocent, too.
It won't work.
Why not?
What we just saw in the news is only the start. It's simple supply and demand. If the supply coming up through Mexico falls, then the price north of the border skyrockets. This thing's only gone hot in the last week, and gangbangers are already having it out right in the open. If it's this bad now, it'll be an inferno in a month's time. No way the politicians stand for it. They'll be clamoring for a solution and looking to us to provide it.
That's why nothing ever gets done around here. Politicians. If they just left it to us, maybe we'd actually get somewhere. Okay, let's say you're right. Where does that leave us? Counterintelligence is a slow business. Even if this mad scientist idea of yours pays off, who's to say how long it'll take for us to figure out who he is, let alone who he works for?
I had an idea about that, too.
What are you saying, Jason?
I think it's about time Eliza and I took a vacation. I hear Mexico's nice this time of year.
Fernando Carrion was enjoying a scotch by the pool at about 7 that evening when he recognized the first sign that something strange was going on. Jennifer Reyes was in her room, where she'd spent most of the last few days. He couldn't work out whether she was more terrified of him or the guards. A masked guard, the one with the mirrored Oakleys, strode onto the terrace.
Come with me.
Carrion had enough alcohol in his veins to both not want to and also not to be concerned about the consequences of disobeying. He set the scotch glass down on the side table next to his lounger.
Why? Stand up.
The guard's fingers lightly touched a holstered pistol. He wondered idly whether he could be quick enough to disarm the man, but decided against it. He had always been more of a thinker than a fighter. Other people were better with their fists, and thankfully, they spent their lives cheaply. For most of his life, that awareness had carried him where he needed to go. And so Carrion came to the conclusion that now wasn't the time to change the habits of a lifetime.
Now!
The added stress wasn't necessary. Carrion was already rousing himself from his alcoholic half-slumber. His muscles were pleasantly loose in the heat of the evening, and he pushed himself upright without too much effort. He shrugged insolently, resting most of his weight only on his rear leg, and thrust the other forward with a nonchalance that was only half feigned.
What do you want?
Inside, now.
Carrion shook his arm loose of the guard's outstretched grasp. He could at least do things with dignity. Within the villa, another guard reached for a bank of light switches and killed the pool lights. The turquoise glow died instantly, leaving only a lingering image in Fernando's retinas, and the string of glimmering LEDs set into the flagstones that ringed the terrace still alight. Carrion walked toward the room's bar.
Stop.
Why don't you tell me what the hell's going on? What does it matter to you where I spend my evenings?
He fell silent, considering that very question. He'd been there for a week, maybe 8 days now. He hadn't exactly been in a suitable mental state to commit his exact movements to memory those first two or three. And yet in all that time, barring Jennifer's arrival, the overall routine had not changed. Breakfast was set out on the table every morning by the time he arose, lunch a few hours later, and dinner sometime after that. The guards had barely troubled him with their presence in all that time, other than as a subtle reminder that he was not, in fact, free. So what had changed? He didn't expect an answer to his question, so he wasn't surprised when he didn't receive one. The three men simply stood inside the villa, waiting. But for what? His two guards were tense. It wasn't in what they said, it was the way they said it. Voices taut, muscles almost vibrating with energy. They hadn't been like this before. And as he reached that conclusion, another thought struck him. Both were searching the sky with their eyes. They were expecting someone. Could it be a rescue mission? Carrion dismissed the prospect before hope had any opportunity to flare in his breast. He was not a sentimental man. That wasn't an appropriate character trait in a business like this. He cared only for the cold, hard facts, which were not in his favor. If his people had located him, and the guards knew about it, then the last thing they would allow him to do was stand here. So, a visitor then. Deciding that he had no intention of waiting at the door like a mother pining for her children, Carrion paced inside and made for the small bar area. The movement caught the attention of the guard with the Oakleys, now perching ostentatiously on top of his head, but he was afforded no more than a cursory glance. Carrion poured himself another drink. He idly wondered whether he was the one paying for all this. Probably. That piece of shit Grover had tricked him. He had to admire the balls on the man and the skill of his execution, if not the outcome. Definitely not the outcome. He heard the chopper blades a few seconds later. There were none, and then they seemed to be right overhead, which meant the helicopter had to be flying low. In these mountains, the sound would be trapped inside a rocky valley with no way out. You could be 100 feet away and have no idea a chopper was anywhere nearby. It would take a good pilot, though, especially in the dark, and the only pilots with that kind of experience were military, like his guards, and like Warren Grover, too. The helicopter was flying without running lights and set down on the terrace by the swimming pool like a wraith appearing from the darkness. Its sudden arrival startled even Carrion, who had been expecting it. The second the skids touched down, the rest of the lights on the terrace died, leaving the whole place lit only by the glow from the villa's interior. Two figures exited the helicopter while the blades were still turning. Carrion didn't bother putting a crick in his neck to find out who was coming to pay him a visit. They would be here soon enough. He sat down on the sofa opposite a pair of plush armchairs and waited. He recognized both men as they entered the villa. One conjured a sense of seething, incandescent rage within him, the other a cold, quenching fear. Perhaps that was the effect they intended, a good cop, bad cop kind of deal.
Fernando?
You didn't used to call me that. Not so long ago you called me boss.
Times change.
Apparently so.
How are you enjoying my hospitality?
Carrion raised his glass of scotch in a mock salute.
And here I thought I was paying for all this.
As I said, times change.
We'll see. Can I offer you a drink?
Grover shook his head. Cesar said nothing. He remembered the man properly now. At Altiplano Prison, when the Sicario had broken him out, things had been muddled, but they were clearer now. Carrion crossed his legs and took a sip of his whiskey. Not much, just enough to give the right impression. He had no doubt that his guards were sending Grover frequent updates about his behavior. It was important to play the part. He didn't like the American, how could he? But he could admit that the man was meticulous. It was why he'd hired him in the first place.
And how did that turn out?
Grover took a seat opposite him. Cesar remained standing. Carrion raised his eyebrow.
So?
I need you to do something for me.
I'm not particularly inclined to help you at the moment.
He schooled his expression to avoid displaying even a hint of interest. He was right after all. Grover wanted something. But that wasn't entirely accurate. No. If he'd merely wanted something, he would have sent an underling. Grover needed something from him, and that placed Fernando Carrion into a position of power. Sure, you had to squint to make it out, but it was there, and that was better.
Perhaps Cesar can convince you to help.
The prospect sent a shiver of apprehension up Carrion's spine. Cesar was the kind of man you didn't do business with, just in case. A lot of bad men worked for the Federación cartel, but none had so little empathy as the one standing opposite him. Cesar was a sociopath, a man who did not just kill, but delighted in the application of pain.
Why don't you tell me what you need? I've never found your friend to be much of a conversationalist.
He has his uses.
Grover reached into his pocket and retrieved a slim cell phone. The screen flashed into life, and the American quickly navigated to an audio file. He placed the phone between the two men and tapped play.
Then we raise the stakes. Start hitting back.
Carrion listened to the voice of Ramon Reyes with fascination. His rival was incandescent with rage, and the target of that anger was most curious indeed. He had to know more.
It seems that you acquire enemies at quite a rate.
Carrion's mind raced behind a blank facade that he consciously leavened with a self-conscious smile.
I can warn you from bitter experience that there are more fruitful paths to choose.
You're not my enemy, Fernando. Just an obstacle. Had things worked out differently, perhaps it would be Señor Reyes in your place and not the other way around.
Carrion understood then that this was not an accident. Grover had planned all this, and now the pieces of the jigsaw were tumbling into place. But to what end?
Ramon wants your head. Well, mine. He just doesn't know who he's really fighting.
Nor do I.
He was not supposed to survive, but he escaped. It was a mistake.
You tried cutting off the head of the snake. Not a bad plan, as long as it works. Unfortunately for you, Reyes won't stop now. He can't. Not without losing the respect of his men. And he won't risk that. I wouldn't.
He's rallying them to fight.
Carrion closed his eyes. He understood now. Grover had entered his service almost 2 years before and turned the Federación cartel's security arm into a professional deadly outfit. He'd sourced experts from Britain and Israel, guns from the United States and France, drones from Turkey, and 100 other items from countries all around the world. For a time, his men had been the most feared in all of Mexico. None of the other cartels dared challenge their supremacy. But Carrion had been a fool to believe Grover had ever truly worked for him. He was a parasite, like one of those wasps who laid their eggs inside a live animal, feeding off its flesh before finally breaking free from a dying husk. But he had gambled big, and now his bet was hanging in the balance. Carrion relaxed, now that he better understood the lay of the land.
So what do you want from me? Don't you have a war to fight?
Grover radiated a volcanic energy.
Ramon has called his men to war, and they've answered, haven't they? But mine haven't. They want to hear from me, not you.
I kept you for a reason. I need you to film a message. It's in both of our interests. If your men don't fight, then we'll both lose everything. And what use would you be to me then?
Carrion paused before he spoke, and when he eventually did so, his words came quietly. The tone of a man who has accepted his fate, or perhaps one who spies a way out.
Haven't I already lost everything?
You're trying my patience.
A tick in Grover's cheek twitched several times before becoming quiescent.
Do you want to find out how much more you have to lose?
No recording will work. No tape, no video. My people will expect me to fight by their side, not hide in a bunker while they risk their lives. What you want is impossible. Unless...
When he fell silent, Grover's twitch returned.
Unless what?
Let me meet with them. Explain the stakes. Tell them that you are to be trusted. to be followed. Without my blessing, they will never be yours.
His offer made, he fell silent.
Too risky.
Then we are at an impasse.
Perhaps we should rectify that. You don't need fingers to film a recording. You don't need kneecaps either. We won't touch your pretty little face. But the rest of you is fair game.
Look at me, Grover. Look deep into my eyes and ask yourself how far I am willing to go. I won't break. I won't bend. Not for a man like you. If you want my assistance, this is my only offer.
Another rapid-fire sequence of twitches erupted on Grover's face, but the American stayed silent, his gaze probing Carrion's face for any hint of a lie. At long last, the man spoke.
Two of my men will be your shadows. If you take a shit, they'll be watching. If you attempt to pass a message, you will die. So will your unfortunate pen pal. We clear?
Elated, Carrion battled not to show it. This was a slightly less forlorn hope than his present predicament, but there was at least a glimmer of light. He could make it work. He had to.
How will you explain that?
Grover smiled, a cold, dead expression that didn't reach his eyes.
This is war. Our enemies are everywhere.
Then we have a deal.
Trap and Ikeda traveled light and quiet, catching a commercial flight down to California and crossing the southern border by car under assumed names. There was no reason to suppose that anyone was even aware of their little off-books investigation, let alone had any reason to flag their arrival in-country, but why take the chance? Despite the day's intense heat at their current elevation, the nearby volcano that towered over the city of Toluca still wore its snow cap. Trap glanced up from a guidebook placed ostentatiously on the cafe table between them.
He used to be almost 3,000 feet taller. You believe that?
Ikeda was reclined in her chair, rangy legs stretched out onto the sidewalk, forcing her to retract them on occasion to avoid overly obstructing the passing pedestrians. A pair of ridiculous sunglasses was perched on top of her head. They had a cheap, already scratched Gucci logo, but since they'd been purchased from a nearby street vendor, they didn't command designer label prices.
What did, honey?
The volcano.
Trap gestured down the street toward where the hulking monolith rose from the earth.
Kinda hard to miss.
I had other things on my mind.
Her posture stiffened, though had he not been quite so intimately attuned to her body language, Trap might never have noticed.
Is that him?
He didn't visibly look up from his coffee. The cafe's glass window was suitably reflective and allowed him to observe the street with almost perfect clarity.
Think so?
Real all-American, huh?
Says you.
Trap gestured at the waiter, a diminutive man with strangely delicate features, and left a couple of banknotes underneath his now empty coffee cup. The man bustled over with a tray as they stood to leave. They were dressed like typical tourists, American tourists, which, as the rest of the world understood, meant not very well. Trap came complete with baggy khaki cargo shorts tucked over a white polo shirt and accented with a camera on a strap around his neck. Ikeda was somewhat better put together, with her black hair pulled back in a neat ponytail. She mainly carried off the look as a result of her superior beauty. The man they were following, DEA agent Raymond Burke, was a tall man. Despite the heat, he was wearing a navy blazer and dark pants. He had no luggage and was not visibly armed, though his frame was sufficiently broad to allow for the possibility that a weapon could be concealed from sight somewhere on his body. They trailed him without making any attempt to disguise their presence, relying on their dress and appearance to evade any watching eyes. Overhead, a messy warren of telephone cables crisscrossed the street, swaying gently in the breeze. Gnarled, leafy trees studded the streets at regular intervals. The center of the city was a contradiction of beautiful Spanish colonial architecture and staid, functional 60s brutalism. Wide-open plazas disappeared into tangles of narrow alleyways without warning. They paused for a few seconds not far from the cathedral, apparently to consult the guidebook.
I think we're clear. No tail.
I agree.
They resumed their own chase, walking casually through a covered market as hawkers offered them tacos and cold drinks with lazy insouciance. They turned around the corner which Burke's dark head had passed a few seconds earlier and ran directly into him. His eyes flashed with suppressed anger, and he spoke quietly yet with evident menace.
Why are you following me?
I think we're neighbors.
Trapp casually scanned the street before he extended his hand.
From Fairfax.
Burke shook it warily, evidently off balance.
Yeah, you got any ID you can show me?
Don't usually carry any.
Then I hope you'll understand that I don't usually trust strangers.
Trapp spotted a bar that was opening for the morning. The proprietor was setting up an arrangement of white plastic tables and chairs on the street outside, but the interior was pleasingly gloomy.
Maybe we can take this somewhere private where we establish our bona fides.
I don't think so, buddy.
Burke took a step back, and his hand drifted to his belt loop where his fingers rested before inching backwards.
He's armed.
Trapp started to reply, but Ikeda got there first.
Easy, Tiger.
She produced a business card from inside an astonishingly large purse, which Trapp knew contained almost nothing. She flashed it in front of the agent's face.
Recognize the name?
So what? Anyone could get one of those printed. It means nothing.
I'm not asking you to take my word for it. Dial the number. Or better yet, dial your own switchboard and ask them to put you through. We can wait. But you know my colleague's right. We might want to do this out of sight.
Burke's indecision was written on his face. He snatched the card with two fingers and gestured at the bar across the street.
Go get a beer. If this checks out, I'll join you.
Sounds like a fair trade. See you in a sec.
She indicated for Trapp to join her, and he followed. He waited until they were out of earshot.
Colleague?
She continued into the bar.
Dos cervezas, por favor?
Her Spanish was tinged with a valley twang. The owner nodded and gestured to the outdoor seating. Ikeda mimed that she wanted to get out of the heat and selected the furthest table from the entrance. They seated themselves in chairs that offered them a good view of anyone approaching.
Hey, if you want to tell them we're screwing, be my guest. I just didn't think it sounded pertinent.
Pertinent? You and your big words.
Burke joined them about 90 seconds later, his concerns obviously allayed. He slid Director of Central Intelligence Lawrence's card back across the surface of the table, and Ikeda magicked it back into her purse.
So, I guess you guys are big shots, huh?
He glanced over his shoulder and stuck three fingers up. The bartender already had two bottles of beer on the counter and was in the process of removing their caps. He crouched down and procured a third.
That's the problem with this line of work. The more people who know about a thing, the more chance it gets blown to hell. Unfortunately, that leads to inefficiencies.
Like needing the director of the CIA to vouch that you're on the up and up? I hear that. So, how can I help my beloved cousins from Virginia?
We were thinking that maybe we could help each other. Give a little, get a little, that kind of thing.
Depends on what you have for me.
How well do you know Leo Conway, Agent Burke?
Burke visibly stiffened. He glanced at them in turn, clearly measuring his words.
He's Ingles' guy, right? Was, anyway.
Yes.
She really could be cold, Trapp reflected. Not to him, not usually, anyway. Though he would have to make up for the camping trip at some point. That much was clear. But she was good at this line of work.
He placed a call to you several days ago.
Her remark revealed that they had been listening.
I thought you said you wanted to work together, didn't you? Because this doesn't feel too simpatico right now, if you know what I'm saying.
Trapp glanced at Ikeda, wondering whether to intervene. Burke wasn't too dissimilar a man to him. Was this the correct way to handle him? Evidently sensing that he was wavering, she cut off his train of thought with an almost imperceptible shake of her head.
Okay, then.
I'm not accusing you of anything, Ray. Can I call you that?
My friends do.
Let's see what we can do about that. As I said, we're not coming after you.
Burke kinked his eyebrow with interest.
Then Conway?
Maybe.
I thought there was something weird about that phone call. The guy sounded spooked.
We know.
His eyes widened.
You were listening?
Don't tell anyone.
I'm not sure I like that. Big brother listening into my phone calls.
Not yours.
Still.
You said you thought he sounded spooked. Why?
Burke looked suddenly uneasy. He clenched his jaw, then scanned the bar. The bartender had disappeared into the back, and there were no other customers.
Listen, I don't know you guys from Adam. You've got important friends, I get that, but so did Conway. And now my boss is dead, and no one seems real interested in finding out why, except you guys. And you just showed up out of the blue.
A trickle of sweat ran down the back of Trapp's neck, and he glanced up with genuine disappointment at the dark, dusty blades of a criminally underpowered ceiling fan ambling in gentle sweeps above his head. He dropped his gaze back down.
You knew Engel?
Burke took a swig of his beer.
Not socially. He was a nice guy and good at what he did, but that's not the point.
I know.
Trapp silently measured his next steps and decided to take the plunge.
Conway's a gambling addict. He was selling classified information to dig himself out.
That's why Engel died? For money?
Burke's expression turned more thoughtful, and he leaned toward them, resting on his elbows.
Who knows this?
For now, just us three and a few friends back in Washington. We're keeping the circle tight.
Why? Can't you just bring him in?
We could, but there's another player, his handler. Conway's just a pawn. I'm guessing even he doesn't know why he's digging for what he's selling. We want the guy above him in the chain, because right now, we don't have a clue what's really happening.
That makes two of us.
Burke's expression cleared.
Fine. I'll bite. You were listening in anyway, so I guess you know what he wanted. The call logs between Salazar and Abalos.
That's right. Look, this is your beat. Who the hell are these guys?
Senator Josefina Salazar is a real piece of work. She's running for the presidency here, heavily funded, and it looks clean. But so does a lot of the cartel cash. She came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden she has a real shot at winning, too. You know the type. Can't just let a hot-button issue pass her by without sticking her nose in for the headlines. Looks like she's graduated to generating them, too.
What do you mean?
Burke glanced around the bar again, confirming that it was still empty. A droplet of condensation on the side of his bottle of beer tumbled into another, creating a chain reaction that dripped onto the table.
You're not listening to Conway, right? Not officially?
I guess not.
Well, we don't listen to Mexican government types. Not officially.
Trapp raised an eyebrow.
But it happens?
The Mexicans let us fly surveillance planes from time to time. Just Cessna citations fitted out with listening gear and high-resolution cameras. They don't look like much from the outside, but they suck in all kinds of data. Mainly cell phone. Who's talking to who and where from. We're not really supposed to listen in to conversations. We're sure as shit not supposed to record them. You got it. So anyway, a couple of days ago, one of the surveillance techs called me up. Said he had something hot. Didn't want any part of it. Well, it wasn't just hot. It was dynamite. You guys heard of the name Hector León?
They shook their heads.
He's a Mexican. Captain in their Marines. Good guy. He was in command of the quick reaction force that went to that prison break last week. Well, Abalos wanted him to take the heat for the screw-up. Not just that. He wanted him out of the picture so there wouldn't be any unpleasant questions. And Salazar was only too happy to oblige. This is her issue to ride all the way to the presidential mansion. But the thing is, well, Abalos is on the cartel payroll. We know that. But from what I heard, it sounds like Señora Salazar is too.
Trapp leaned back in his chair.
Damn.
You got that right. Now you see why I didn't want to say anything over the phone to Conway. It wasn't just that I didn't trust him. I didn't. That's only half of it. It's that if what we overheard got out, the military down here would be in a whole heap of shit. It could blow up the whole Mexican election if somebody leaked that the leading candidate was on the cartel payroll.
It sounds like that's no bad thing.
Look, I agree with you, all right. But we ain't got a good reputation down here. We've done some real janky things in these parts, and they won't forget that anytime soon, whatever happens. If we start messing with their elections, hell, I don't know. But it wouldn't be good.
There's one thing I don't understand. It's a heck of a story, but why would Conway's handler care about any of that?
That's the question, right? I'm guessing we figure that out, we crack this whole thing.
The car was a battered soccer mom mobile with an ingrained cigarette funk. It wasn't exactly a style to which Fernando Carrion was ordinarily accustomed, but then again, there was a lot about the last few days which was new to him. And besides, in that moment, his mind was otherwise occupied, wrestling with a problem that exercised it more than any he could remember. The plain facts of the matter were that he was in deep peril. Grover had spent 2 years with him, turning the Federación cartel into a mean professional outfit, well-armed and equipped with the latest surveillance tools. He had turned what was essentially a vicious street mob into something more akin to a multinational corporation with its own special forces arm. And where his predecessors, and hitherto Carrion himself, had largely eschewed the complex, skilled world of professional espionage, Grover had instead embraced it, recruiting reliable sources even in the belly of the beast, Washington, D.C. It had always been possible to recruit informants in Mexico, of course. Sometimes it seemed like half the payroll of any given police force supplemented their incomes by judiciously sharing information. After all, when the stick was the threat of death at any moment, the carrot of a comfortable life was far more appealing. But in recent years, the Americans had changed tack, presumably recognizing the fruitlessness of their prior course. Where once they had been happy to let the Mexican government clean house, which was a threat only of a short incarceration inside a prison where it was possible to procure women, narcotics, alcohol, and satellite television, now they wanted heads. More precisely, they wanted the leaders of all the major cartels to serve long sentences inside high-security federal supermax jails. Small, featureless boxes with immovable concrete furniture, bare light bulbs that never turned off, exercise yards where you never even saw the sky, places in which a man might go mad years before he ever saw freedom, if that was even on offer. And that was the task he had given Grover, to prevent at all costs his own extradition to the United States. Unfortunately, it was now clear that Grover had had other intentions all along. Like a parasite, the man had burrowed his way into the Federación and subverted its activities to his benefit. He'd built himself an army in plain sight, and then he'd seized control.
You plan on telling me where we're going?
Carrion peered out of the darkened rear window into a vast, featureless emptiness of desert. Stars twinkled in the skies overhead, an effervescent glow against the velvet quilt of night. As expected, he received no reply, only a strained groan from the car itself as the elderly vehicle jolted over a pothole on the dirt road. There were four other men in the vehicle with him, all Grovers. His one-time security chief, now the arbiter of his incarceration, was not with them. That was a problem, and doubtless it was intentional. If Grover was smart, which was not in doubt, then he would never allow himself to be present in the same place as both Carrion and the cartel's sicarios at the same time. He switched tack.
What's the plan?
You have your instructions.
And you have yours.
Carrion shifted his gaze over each in turn as they stared resolutely ahead, some clutching onto their weapons, others still with them holstered in plain sight. Their task was simple. If he showed any sign of disloyalty, any evidence that he was attempting to communicate with his men, then they were to terminate the meeting immediately and allow no survivors. They would probably let him live, but even that was not assured. He gave it maybe a 1-in-2 chance, which was a risk not worth countenancing. The minivan's headlights bounced over the uneven, dusty terrain before the vehicle began to slow, turning left without indicating. 5 minutes later, they reached what he presumed was their ultimate destination, a drab wooden farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, electric light leaking through a spiderweb of cracks between the building's wooden slats. There were no other vehicles, something he found curious.
Out.
The guard next to him jabbed Carrion in the side, hard. A backseat swell of car sickness began to fade as he stepped back onto solid ground. It was an unmanly affliction, he'd often thought. He was wearing light blue jeans over tan boots, a white t-shirt, and a faded blue work jacket zipped halfway to his neck. Despite the darkness, he looked like any other laborer in the county.
You could have just asked.
Carrion rubbed his torso, wincing with frustration. As a younger man, he might have taken the blow to his ribs as a mortal insult and reacted accordingly. He itched to return the favor, but held himself back. His time would come. The guard in charge glanced at the shack, apparently determining whether they were being watched, before returning his attention to Carrion once he was satisfied they were not. He gripped his upper arm tightly, leather-gloved fingers biting into the soft flesh.
You do anything I don't like, say anything I don't like, it'll be the last thing you do. You're here for one purpose. If you have other ideas, then you're no use to me. And my instructions are to get rid of you. Understand?
Perfectly. You need me, and I need you. Message received. You'll be the first to die.
The walk to the farmhouse was short, punctuated by the crunch of boots against stony desert earth. Carrion kicked up a thin sheen of dust as he walked, two guards ahead and two behind, which coated his lower legs like a mountain snow line. The five men paused outside the ramshackle building, and the last unspoken reminder passed between Carrion and the masked guard who appeared to be in charge. They never shared their names, these people. The message was clear: don't screw around. The front door was opened, hard enough to slam against the opposite wall, and the two guards in front made an ostentatious show of entering first and checking that the room was safe. Only a couple of seconds later was Fernando Carrion allowed to enter.
Boss!
One of the capos jumped to his feet and leapt forward before arresting his momentum, giving the masked guards a strange look.
You're safe, thank God. We didn't know for sure what happened to you.
Carrion surveyed the squalid, drab room, a far cry from the luxurious accommodation he was used to, and realized he'd sacrifice all of the material comforts of the existence he'd enjoyed for the past two decades for just one more drink at the teat of the most intoxicating narcotic known to man, power. It wasn't a lifestyle that Grover had stolen from him. It was his only reason for existence. A man could live on after being stripped of power, but some inherent part of him would forever be lost. Carrion suddenly remembered the capo's name.
Iker.
Until recently, the short, bespectacled man had been a relatively low-level functionary, in charge of some regional security outfit or other. He had a fearsome reputation that belied his bookish appearance, he remembered. A man who was always marked for higher things. Things had apparently changed since he went to jail. Grover had hidden things from him. Promotions, obviously, and no doubt also the quiet removal of intransigent elements, those who would not acquiesce to his wishes. Iker squinted curiously.
Jefe?
It's been a long day.
Carrion glanced up and noticed that the guards had fanned out so that each was stationed in one corner of the rectangular room. There would be no inch that their eyesight did not cover. Not that he'd expected any different.
A long fucking week.
Where have you been?
Iker was still standing opposite him, glancing over his shoulder at the guards. Carrion suspected that his underling guessed that something was amiss, and the knowledge of his impotence burned within him. The agents of his salvation could easily be the deliverance of his destruction, and presently the latter was more likely than not.
Busy?
A heavy, rough-hewn wood table sat in the center of the farmhouse, which was lit by a single bare bulb in the center of the room. Somewhere outside, out of sight, he heard the low chugging of the diesel generator powering it. On the surface of the table were half a dozen dusty glasses, messily ringing a bottle that was half full of amber liquid.
What are you drinking?
He seated himself at the head of the table.
Tequila.
Iker reached for the bottle and poured another round of drinks. He pushed one toward his boss.
My mother's recipe. It's fierce.
Good. It's been a long drive.
He reached for the glass, lifted it to his lips, and drained it with his eyes closed. The liquid was fierce. So fierce it burned the back of his throat and stung his eyes, though he was careful not to make a show of it when he opened them.
You weren't kidding. I would put hairs on the balls of a 10-year-old.
Worked for me.
What's the latest?
The warmth flowed into his gut. He flicked his wrist and sent the glass skating back toward Iker, who dutifully filled it and topped up his own. Iker took the seat at Carrion's right, and the other half dozen of his lieutenants, or less senior than Iker himself, followed suit. Iker looked surprised and barely concealed a glance at the nearest of the masked guards in his eyeline.
You don't know?
They don't tell me much.
Carrion accepted a refilled glass of home brew, which he sniffed appreciatively. This drink, this place, it all reminded him of his childhood, of pulling himself up from the dirt and grime and hopelessness of poverty, of becoming one of the most powerful men in all of Mexico. Grover had tried to steal that from him, but he would not succeed. Not now he remembered why he wanted it in the first place. He saw the concerned look on Iker's face.
I'm kidding. We've had to move around. Security reasons. Reyes' men have been everywhere.
That's true. The whole top rank of the organization is gone. Everyone.
Carrion thought about it for a few seconds. The loss of some of his oldest friends pained him. But unlike him, they were weak. They were not leaders. They had allowed themselves to be deceived and decapitated. He lifted his glass and held it out in front of him expectantly. He watched as the other men slowly understood what he was asking of them and raised their own glasses in turn.
To the next generation, then. You six will be my right hands. You will fight by my side, and you will get the rewards for doing so. You understand?
They shared looks, all of them except Iker, who held his gaze without blinking. He liked that about the man. He looked like an accountant but had steel in his spine, and he wasn't afraid of violence either. He was steady in a fight, they said.
He will need to be.
The others, though, shared a variety of expressions. Some were fearful, others wore a glint of hope, or avarice, or disbelief, or all of the above. But that was war. The strong would survive and the weak would be culled, and it would all be worth it so long as they took a few of the enemy down with them.
What do you want from us?
Carrion liked that also. He had his eyes on the prize, this one.
They hit us by surprise.
He was lying.
Plan to kill me in that fucking jail. That's why I had to get out at such short notice. That's why I've been missing for the past few days.
They've killed too many of us already, those Crusader scum. They fight like rats in a sack, without honor.
That's because they know what's at stake. Not riches or power or fame, just survival. And so must we.
He met eyes with each of the capos in turn, holding his gaze until he saw indecision shift to belief.
We need to kill these assholes. We need to go into their homes and dump their bodies in the streets. We will show them who runs this country.
He paused and sniffed the alcohol. It was coarse, impure stuff and stung his nose. It brought tears to his eyes. But this fight would not be easy, and maybe this was the reminder he needed.
Are you with me?
Sí, jefe!
The affirmation filled his heart with pride. He still had it after all, whatever it was. The power to inspire men into battle. Perhaps he would have been a warrior in days gone past. Perhaps. But this was his battlefield, and he still had what it took. They all expressed their belief in him, all but Iker. Carrion locked eyes with him.
And you?
The fighter held the silence for long enough that Carrion began to wonder whether he knew precisely how much power he presently held. But after a long, seemingly interminable wait, he nodded.
To the death, jefe.
Then let's drink!
Each man drained his glass in one and set it back on the table. There was a palpable air of anticipation in the room, a rush of conspiracy that bonded each man to the one at his side. Carrion knew that they would fight for him. Even those with doubts would look to the man to their left, and then the man to their right, and see only shame in refusing to fight. It was what had carried men into battle for thousands of years, and it wasn't changing now. That some, probably many, would die because of this decision did not trouble him. No one entered this line of business with a lily-white heart. Doubtless, each of the men seated around this table had blood on their hands. And besides, he reasoned, Grover had left him with precious little choice. If he didn't go to war with the Reyes cartel, then the men from Culiacan would wipe his own organization out. There was no retirement for men like him. The only way to survive this fight was to win it. That meant Grover as well. He surveyed the four guards, or at least the two he could see from his current vantage point, shielding his burning distaste for them from his expression, yet speaking loudly enough that they could hear what he said.
Iker, I want you by my side at all times. Spread the word. I will pay $1,000 bounty for the life of every one of Reyes's men. No questions asked. Understood?
His new right-hand man inclined his head, but Carrion wasn't watching Iker. Instead, his attention was focused on his newly acquired shadows. One of them, he thought it was the man who'd warned him earlier, stepped forward.
That won't be possible. For your safety, sir,
I make the goddamn rules! It's my life on the line! Do you understand? We can't win this fight without taking a little bit of risk.
He couldn't see the expression on the guard's face, but he had a good idea. The man was in an impossible situation. Either he fell afoul of Grover's instruction to keep him separated from his men, or he embarrassed Carrion in front of them. Both outcomes had obvious risks. But as he knew he would, the masked guard bowed his head and stepped back.
As you wish, Jefe.
After all, Carrion knew that he had not technically overstepped Grover's red line. He hadn't, yet, attempted to warn his people of the trouble he was in. And the guard must have known that to kneecap his charge now in front of these men would destroy Carrion's authority and risk dooming the already flailing operation.
Good. Let's get moving. We have a busy few days in front of us.